Greetings once again to each and all. This is the Maine Turton, John Lash, recording on the 30th of March, 2015. Newsflash number 8, entitled Archons and Psychopaths. This is a rather a special edition of the Newsflash that focuses on one particular issue that came to my attention about a week ago. One particular topic concerning the cosmological background of correction, you might say. I still intend to deliver a final talk on release from pretending as long as we are in the period when Jupiter remains hovering in the constellation of the Crab. So let me remind you once again of the parameters of that event. In doing so, I could correct a small technical error I made in the textual notes of NF007. There I indicated that Jupiter turned retrograde on the 9th of December, where it was just entering the constellation of the Lion, the composite stars of the Lion, and it was about 8 degrees or 16 full moon widths from the star Regulus or Valor at the heart of the Lion. Okay, then it edged back into the Crab, and that was in late February. So the refresher course in Release from Pretending stems from that time. Now, coming up, here's where I made the slight error. Coming up on April 9th is a remarkable event. That is the moment that Jupiter is in its station direct. That is to say, it's not moving forward or backwards, but it is at the position to resume its forward or direct motion. And I indicated in my notes that that occurs in 18 degrees of Leo in the Crab. But actually, it's deeper into the Crab. It occurs in 13 degrees of Leo. This is one of those tiny little typographical mistakes that I could occasionally make. As you know, I do make errors on a rather frequent basis. And in the absence of anyone to check out these details, they go out to you until I am able to correct them. So Jupiter comes out of its retrograde cycle in about 10 days, but it still has to regain ground that it lost. And only in late May does it re-enter the Lion composite star. So we have April and May coming up, 2 more months of the refresher course. And there will be time in that period for me to make some concluding comments about release from pretending, which I might note is an ongoing lesson unfolding and developing and revealing itself with considerable intensity right now. Sometimes when you have transactions with other human animals, what formerly and quaintly used to be called relationships, well, I swear to the goddess, you don't really know if they're pretending or not. Some cases it's almost impossible to tell. And how does it play out, this human drama? Let's say, for instance, you engage with someone personally, and they pretend to love you. And you take it at face value because you don't see any clear and obvious reason to reject it or question it. And then time goes by and something shifts. And the next thing you know, well, they pretend to hate you. I mean, this is how I view it. It's just a shift from one act of pretending to another. The human animals who are caught in such kaleidoscopic emotional disorder are, of course, sick and deeply troubled. What is the way out of pretending in those cases? beats the living poop out of me. I couldn't begin to tell you. So anyway, I won't comment further on that because that's a slight digression. But I will go directly to the topic of archons and psychopaths. To begin, I'd like to cite an article which is linked here. This article appeared in the Daily Mail from the United Kingdom on the 26th of November, 2014. Okay? And as you can see from the headline, this article says, Earth is being protected by a Star Trek-style invisible shield. Scientists probe mysterious barrier blocking killer electrons. So the scientific fiction in this particular article is killer electrons. Was it archons or killer electrons? Well, it all depends upon the paradigm or paradigm that you might be wearing at the time, right? I would point out the fourth item in the bullet notes. Scientists are baffled as to how the shield formed and how it works. Well, glory be. Is there ever any discovery about cosmology, the stars, the solar system, not to mention the planet Earth, that doesn't leave scientists baffled? I don't think so. But I can provide a non-scientific and mythopoetic explanation. Description is actually a better word, of how the shield was formed and how it works. To do so, I'd like to ask you to all cast your minds back a few months to the month of August 2014. Now, you may recall that around the 8th of August, pretty close to the 8th, which was, let's see, 2008, 2015, the 8th anniversary of the Terma of Gaia Awakening, I did a talk on Red Ice Radio in which I talked about the archontic infection and white genocide. Now that talk, what about that talk? I don't know what to say about that talk because to me it was an extremely important event. It was a singular event. And yet it somehow didn't perhaps come across in the way that I would have hoped. Also, I was not able, within the limits of that interview, to present a full-blown explanation of the various stages of the archontic infection, which is a hack into the neural circuits of the human brain. And I have more to say about it. Getting around to these things is not easy due to the isolation in which I operate. And delivering on the internet for me is becoming less satisfactory as the days go by and appears to have diminishing returns. So I face a dilemma of how to complete the profile of the archonic infection. And I want you to know, in case you're wondering about it, that it troubles me as much as it may trouble you, that I have not presented a complete and adequate exposition of that subject. However, the point I'd like to make right now is the point that I made at the time, I believe. When you consider the Gnostic intel that can be drawn from the meager surviving sources, such as the Nag Hammadi books in Coptic, well, you have a rare treasure trove of knowledge from those seers and those to Less Day of the Mysteries. I mean, it's just a very great fact that it is a rare and unique treasure trove. And I've rummaged in that treasure trove, as you know, a lot, and I've pulled out a good many gems, and I've reconstructed parts of it and extrapolated other parts of it over the years. What I will point out once again is that going back into the Gnostic material to get intel that applies to today is it's a big responsibility, you know, and it is something that really pays off really well if you do it correctly and carefully and soberly, as I try to do, and as I know many of you as well attempt to do insofar as you delve into those materials. However, those materials, the received content of Gnostic intel, is not current. It is not current Gnostic intel. Now, during the GNE, I produced some current Gnostic intel. What is that? It is simply the intel reported by a Telestus living today who would employ the method of the mysteries, which is instruction by the light, and who would draw from the cognitive ecstasy, which is Gnosis, here and now, right here and now, on this planet now. And I believe that I pointed out back in August that the claims I was making about the archontic infection having been a neural hack, not a genetic hack, not a hack into the genome, but a hack into the neuronal circuits of the human brain, came from direct and current Gnostic intel. And I believe that I stated a disclaimer to the effect that you can take it or leave it. You can believe me or not. You can dismiss it or contemplate it or deconstruct it. You do anything you like. But you can't fault me for not being totally transparent in telling you where it comes from, can you? Yes, it comes from me. It comes through my mind based on my particular shamanic skills and practices and the expertise that I have developed in that genre, such as it is. Now, I'm not infallible, but I was compelled at that time to put out this Gnostic intel, which I had received at that time. What I did not put out was some other Gnostic intel that I received at the same time. The reason I didn't do so is because I thought that the intel about the neural hack and how the archonic infection was delivered into the human brain through the ear by way of a kind of mucus, a kind of secretion in the milk of aphids, okay? Was pretty wild and pretty big. It's a pretty big piece of information to swallow, isn't it? So I thought I had pretty much loaded up the circuits of credulity of human animals who might care or dare to listen to what I say by putting out that choice piece of Gnostic intel. But what I can tell you now, August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, like 8 months later, 7-8 months later, is that I got an equally awesome piece of Gnostic intel at that same time, which I decided to keep to myself, but not entirely. I wrote a memo, which I called a secret memo, and I decided that I would not send it out to you in the news letters or news flashes. I can't remember what was running at that time. I wouldn't send it out to the mailing list, but I did send it, I believe, to three different people who are longtime students, just for the record. So they have that memo attached to an email dated early in August. What is in that memo explains the discovery made by scientists 2 or 2.5 months later in November. And so, when this article came to my attention not too long ago, I decided that it might be appropriate to turn around and release this secret memo to you all now, so you can all study it, and you can all consider how it explains this phenomenon of the Star Wars type shield that is now installed around the planet Earth. How did this come to be installed? Well, if you stay in the story and stay in the narrative, then your mind will adhere to the plot of her story. And by that adhesion, your mind will formulate questions which are only appropriate and meaningful within the frame of the story, and in many cases only possible to ask on the basis of the story. And then, in turn, after framing such questions, your mind will allow you to form answers to those questions. As you know, this is how it works with the Sophianic narrative of the mysteries. So here we go. Let's take a look at the secret memo of early August 2014. Now, I warn you that there are some tremendous claims. No, I'm not going to use a passive voice. I warn you that this memo puts forth some tremendous claims. Claims that could only be made by an observant human animal who has the ability to detect what the Earth does, how the Earth behaves, how it reacts as a living, divine, cosmic creature to the conditions of its environment. Now, you know how a porcupine reacts, probably, to the conditions of its environment, don't you? Just to give you an example, the porcupine will stiffen, and if it feels or senses or intuits any threat or danger around it, even before there is any contact with the source of the danger, it shoots out quills. And if you've ever seen a beagle hound from up there, back up there in Maine, come back whining from the woods with its muzzles full of porcupine quills, then you know what I'm talking about. Or look at the undersea creatures, such as the octopus, squid. When it feels danger in the environment, a threat coming from some entity, it sends out a stream of ink. These are just two examples that flash to mind out of 50 that could easily be compiled. Is that not so? Well, now I ask you, if these animals in the natural world behave in this manner, is it not reasonable to consider that the mother animal, in whom they all find their life and their behaviors, would react in the same way to her environment? She is, of course, in the first place, the source of that animal behavior. So if she is the source of that animal behavior, which, as I say, could be cited in dozens and dozens of examples, then isn't it logical to assume that she could exhibit such behavior herself? I think so. So this document describes her behavior in a little phrase of four words. She arms, she strikes. In the second and third seconds of correction, as the memo explains, there are three key intervals of time. Look at them closely. Between August 26th and August, excuse me, between July 26th and August 10th, the Aeon Sophia arms. Between August 10th and the 28th, she strikes for the first time. Then, between August 28th and the fall equinox, September 24th, she strikes a second time. Hence, I give you this little snippet of mythopoetic language. She arms, she strikes. Now, if you wish to study the memo in some detail, well, read it carefully. It goes into particular detail about the timing, about the breaks between the strikes, and so forth and so on. The primary thing to understand, of course, is what does she use to strike and who is she striking? So I won't read the entire paper because that would be redundant, but I will read these three opening paragraphs so that you can be crystal clear about what I'm describing. What the Aeon Sophia uses to strike is unpulsed telluric infrasound. You can abbreviate it UTI. That is infrasound. It is telluric, meaning it comes from the earth, tellus, the ground. It comes from the ground beneath your feet. It is infrasound, and the peculiar and remarkable feature of this particular striking weapon of the planetary animal mother is that it is unpulsed. So, energetically, you can imagine the Bhairavi strike of summer 2014 to be something like the peal of a single note that does not trepidate but streams evenly in one unbroken tone. The planetary animal mother uses unpulsed telluric infrasound to counterattack the Archont hordes that now impinge upon the Earth. Unpulsed means that there are no frequency modulations in the pealing tone that she emits from the core of the planet. Now contrast this kind of directed energy weapon, as you might call it in quotes, with the extremely rapid, pulsed, and packeted shortwave frequencies of the Archons. Their attack, which issues from the outer reaches of the solar system toward the Earth, I might add, comes in the form of wave upon wave of pulsing frequencies that resemble the long 1-0 permutations of computer code. For instance, one pulsed and packeted emission from the Archon horde in outer space might consist of frequency modulations on the order of a 0-1 analog sequence running to, say, 10 billion units. Their assault, now underway in August of 2014, consists of repeated barrages of such strung-out shortwave blasts directed toward the surface of the Earth. Such frequencies are, of course, incomprehensible to the human mind. They are exponentially more massive and complex than any range of signals emitted from shortwave cellular network antennas. Imagine them to be something like the screeching of cicadas or other insects, the sound of which can be heard and followed by human hearing, revealing a clear orchestral modulation of the frequencies. The archontic attack emissions hitting the Earth now, summer 2014, are like the cicada orchestrations erupting in waves, but normally, fortunately, inaudible, and they propagate in volumes far beyond any kind of detection by the human senses or human-made devices. So what I'm asking you to do here, as you consider this Gnostic intel, is to compare these archontic emissions from outer space directed upon the Earth to the emissions of shortwave cellular networks that are now spread across the Earth, cell phone networks and so forth. So anyone who's investigated the matter knows of the nefarious effects upon the human mind and body of these cellular networks, as well as the effects upon other animal creatures, including particularly bees. And so you can extrapolate from your understanding of shortwave cellular technology here on the planet to the more expansive picture of the vast range of shortwave attack emissions emanating from the Archons. Basically, since correction began in March of 2014, the Archons have been, what is the word I'm looking for, gathering in masses in close proximity to the Earth. This is the imaginative picture that I would propose to you to go along with this intel. Correction begins, and the Archons react by closing in, converging, that's the word I want, masses, untold billions, converging upon the Earth and emitting these screeching high-range signals in massive and repetitive sequences of pulsed emissions. Okay? This is what they do. The Archon attack, as I detected it in the summer of last year, was at a height that had previously been unseen. It was at a height of aggression that had previously been unseen. As I say in the notes, due to the inception of correction, the Archons would tend to amass around the Earth at a certain distance in excess of, say, 600-700 miles from the surface of the Earth, and pour upon the Earth these emissions in order to bring about the culmination of their works. The planetary animal mother felt this happening, and she responded with her UTI emissions, as the memo explains. So, half an hour into this newsflash, let me summarize what I just said. Let me take a moment to tell you what I'm telling you. And I'll do it in the first person to make it user-friendly. I'm telling you that back in late July and in August, I simultaneously detected and downloaded an event happening on the planet, an activity of the planet, an action of the planetary animal mother. The way I did so was, first of all, through my intuition as an animal living in her ambience. I detected the intensity of the archontic assault due to the masses of archons gathering around the Earth and pressing in upon the atmosphere. How did I detect that? Well, just as the way any animal would in any environment, you know, a prairie dog in a herd of prairie dogs can detect the dust storm coming. And it might always be just one little prairie dog with its head up out of its hole who first detects the murderous dust storm and then communicates that the warning about that to the other prairie dogs. I'm nothing more than a prairie dog in that sense. But at the same time, being a human animal with trained faculties for cognitive detection and cognitive investigation, noetic faculties, as they should properly be called, I was able to form a description of the events that I was sensing. So I sensed both the incoming assault of the archontic forces, extra atmospherically, and I sensed the UTI proceeding from the planetary animal mother herself. I don't believe that you will find anywhere, if you go investigate, the notion of an unpulsed current, or at least you won't find it framed in this particular way. Now, infrasound is a known phenomenon. Go investigate what infrasound is. I provide some links to clips at the end of the PDF of the secret memo. Go investigate infrasound, by all means. So, infrasound is a known phenomenon in nature and a most fascinating one. And telluric vibrations are known as well. You could say that the Schumann resonance is an example of sorts of a telluric vibration, a telluric frequency. The Schumann resonance, by the way, here's a little footnote, has often wrongly been described as something like the heartbeat or pulse of the earth, when in fact, to my understanding, it is simply the measurement of the velocity of light traveling around the circumference of the earth in the atmosphere of the earth. It's a vibration in the atmosphere of the earth, as far as I know. In either case, the Schumann resonance is something that needs to be understood and framed in Gaian cosmology. What is it to her? What is the Schumann resonance to her? I ask you to go and investigate that. And while we are on this little footnote, I might add that I just received a few days ago a link from a student to an article stating that the Schumann resonance, which normally operates at something like, 7.8 hertz, has now apparently escalated to a much higher frequency, relatively higher, in terms of the scale in which it operates. I can't remember what it was, but it was something like 14, perhaps 12, 14. The Schumann resonance is operating, if this information is to be believed, at a scale approaching twice its normal observed frequency in the past. How would I relate that to the event I'm describing here? Well, first of all, the escalation of the Schumann resonance, its elevation to a higher frequency, might reflect the fact that the Earth is now shielded from outer space in a particular manner that causes the planetary system to operate in a hermetically sealed manner. So you could ask, is the Aeon Sophia hermetically sealing the experiment now in the last 11 minutes of her 24-hour day in the last 200 years, consistent with her intention to mutate Anthropos 11 before the end of this kalpa? Is she creating the conditions in the atmosphere of a hermetically sealed vessel? Well, that is one possibility that you might draw from the increase of the Schumann resonance. Follow me? Another possibility, another factor contributing to the increase of the Schumann resonance would possibly be the compression of the atmosphere, the compression of the ionosphere, the shrinking of the atmosphere, of which I have spoken on various occasions. So these are wonderful current events in the life of the planet. which I encourage you to observe and to consider and contemplate in the framework of the story. Last summer, when I felt and sensed in a prairie dog manner the assault of the Arconic powers at a screeching intensity that was inconceivably nasty, my mind, being trained as it is in Gnostic method, in the Gnostic method, and my mind being framed as it is in her story, immediately asked, what is she going to do about it? Here we are, like in the second section of correction, the second of correction. And there's a critical event, a critical last-ditch assault by the Archons upon the human mind. Their aim, if you can speak of them as having an aim, is the nihilistic goal to produce global madness, mayhem, and death. They are pressing for that outcome. How does she respond? And what immediately came to my mind, without thinking it out, without looking for the word, was the term unpulsed telluric infrasound. It just came to my mind. How does this happen? It happens for me in the way it happens for you. It happens in the way it happens for anybody whose mind is deeply embedded in the narrative. Whenever the mind questions an event, the power of the narrative will itself present an answer to the mind. Now, this doesn't come about accidentally. It's not psychic channeling. It's not even inspired guesswork. It's the result of a rigorous methodology of noetic investigation. And so, I have now put into the exopsyche of the human animal, that is, into the sphere of things which can be spoken and said, the term unpulsed telluric infrasound, directly from my Gnostic investigation. And you'll see in the notes of the secret memo that I dedicate a fair amount of time to making a certain parallel between this event last summer and the operation of directed energy weapons. Now, you may recall the work of Dr. Judy Wood and even of my interviews with her going back a while now. And if you know anything about her work, you will recognize the acronym DEW for directed energy weapon. She claims that directed energy weapons were used on 9/11 at the World Trade Center, and that only a directed energy weapon technology can explain the massive damage that was done there and the kind of damage that was done, tantamount to the complete dematerialization of great masses of glass and concrete and steel. Now, I'm not going to go into that technology, except to say that, according to Dr. Judy Wood, such a weapon would use two components. One is, it requires a static field into which waves can be introduced, so-called interference waves. And so those are the two components, interference waves and a static field to receive them. And then the result of the combination of those two factors is what some people would call irresponsible meddling with the Shiva grids. That is to say, there is an energy release that is able to destabilize matter at the molecular level. Now, I compare that DEW technology with the situation of the Archon assault. Here is the analogy. The Archons present the interference wave from outer space. The interference wave consists of pulsation upon pulsation of packeted frequencies of energy blasting into the atmosphere, blasting into the human mind. However, The main effect, the primary intended effect of that interference from the archons cannot be accomplished unless there is a static field in which it can operate. And the static field, in this case, is provided by the worldwide network of cellular towers and other shortwave technologies and satellite and communication networks, which are all run on this shortwave technology, which is known in itself to be dangerous to human mental health and physical health. So there's a double danger in that massive grid of shortwave technology. In and of itself, it is dangerous. Beyond that, it provides, or has provided until now, the static field into which the archons can project their kind of interference wave and therefore destabilize humanity and derange all of natural processes on the planet. But as of the end of October 2014, they can't do that anymore. The Archon input has been neutralized, and the Earth has been shielded from that assault permanently. And I offer you the article of November 2014 in proof of what I'm saying. Another footnote here. You will notice that I have included in the memo a reference to Secret Weapons for a Silent War, which is a document of blood-chilling content, I might say. Deborah Tavares has widely discussed this document on the internet, and I link you to one interview she did on Jeff Rentz. Given that this document is real, it was found in a copy machine where it was purportedly left by accident or perhaps by design. Given that this document is real, it declares blatantly a war upon the human race by the use of these shortwave weapons. And it is really a shocking experience to read this document or to hear Deborah Tavares give her excellent summary of its contents. And the first couple of times that I listened to it, I was so stunned I couldn't even speak. Finally, when a thought formulated itself in my mind, it was the question, well, how can a human mind conceive of such weaponry? How can any human mind conceive of such an anti-human agenda that relies upon this kind of technology uniquely? It's truly, truly terrifying, and I think that this document is a testament to the extent to which the Archons have penetrated into the human mind. And they have, in fact, they are mind-controlling certain human beings. There's no doubt about that. And they have achieved this degree of mind control among those more advanced technological sectors of the military-industrial complex. That is just a fact. But the good news is that even though the weaponry described in that document still exists and is operating, even though the cell phone tower network is up and running, and so forth and so on, the backup system coming from the Archons themselves has been neutralized and deactivated. This means, or what does this mean? Put your mind around this. Try to wrap your mind around this. It means that those who are running those mind control systems will in fact continue to do what they do, which brings me around to the subject of psychopaths. But at the same time, even though they continue to do what they do, their actions will be subject to a dystrophic decline in effect. They will not be They will not benefit from being constantly juiced by the archontic input from the outer realms of the solar system. Try to get your mind around this. There are two key events to recognize as soon as correction is underway. Immediately upon entering correction in March of 2014, the Aeons of Fire achieved two massive events, acting as a planetary entity. In the first place, she materialized her tulpa. I followed this in previous news flashes. Her tulpa is now materially present in the atmosphere as a colloidal organism, not just a holograph. No, no. An actual colloidal organism invested with superpowers. And secondly, she achieved the shielding of the Earth and the hermetic sealing of this experiment in order to give humanity the advantage to turn now and face the psychopaths. You may recall that I said long ago that we have to leave it to the Aeons of Fire to solve the problem of the Archons in their own sphere, in the extraplanetary zone. And now she has done that. That is a major act of intervention. However, humanity is now left with the psychopaths and archontified human animals and their archontic technology as a major threat to life on this planet, to life, sanity, peace, happiness, joy, freedom, pleasure, everything that a sane and healthy human animal wants in life is under threat by the presence of those psychopaths, those spoilers, and their arsenal. Try to get the picture. She can't intervene in that realm. She will not intervene in that realm. She shall not. I'll give you that language. The Aeons of Fire shall not intervene in the realm of the manifestation of social evil demonstrated by violent and deceiving psychopaths led by the Zads, and so forth and so on. You know the story. She shall not intervene there. Why not? The Aeons of Fire does not have social evil, such as we face it, in her syntax. I've said this going back a long time now. One of the first things that I realized about her mind when I was able to engage it on Infinity Ridge, going on some 12, 13 years ago, was that she does not have the social order, what we call the social order, in her syntax. Why not? Because that is the part of the experiment that we are left free to construct out of our own resources. And in fact, the experiment is so designed that the test for humanity resides in that very area where she, the Aeon, and all the Pleromic Aeons have no informing syntax. It's the part of the experiment that is left free. The creation of the social order is entirely the responsibility of human animals. Social evil on this planet is entirely the product of human animals. Intraspecies violence, the machinations of deceit, division, and domination, the delusional assault of the Abrahamic religions with their program of salvationism, the mind control of the media, of entertainment, of education. There's nothing supernatural about any of that. That's all the product of human behavior, and it has to be confronted and defeated by human behavior. So I would like to leave you with a clear realization of human responsibility in correction as I complete this newsflash. And I would like to assist you to hold the distinction between how the Aeon Sophia intervenes and how she doesn't intervene. And to hold that picture really, really clearly and steadily in your mind as you go forward now, day after day. The point to remember, the essential point to remember regarding her tulpa, is that she operates on the rule of the Dakinis, who also have their highest desire. So Vivi, in the sphere of the Dakinis, has her highest desire. What is the highest desire of the Gaian Dakinis? It is that you command them at your pleasure, by pleasure. You have the pleasure to command her tulpa. This is a supreme privilege afforded to the Antipos due to the supernatural power of the planet itself. Am I making this up? Even if I were making it up, it would still be true. And just try to imagine the implications that begin to appear when you accept that it is true. It is true. It is so big, it is so awesome, that you have to grow into it, even though the entirety of the truth of what I'm saying is present to you at the moment I describe it. What an opportunity is this? What an opportunity. Can you think of any other opportunity that equals the opportunity to couple your personal power with that of the earth and using the boost of the earth to command her supernatural power to take out the executive forces of evil? Can you imagine any other opportunity as fabulous as that? That is planetary magic. And the only way to prove it or disprove it is to try it out. It cannot be proven or disproven by speculation and by abstract arguments on one side or the other. I myself am not going to insist that you believe it. I'm merely stating it to be true to the best of my knowledge. Now, to wind up this newsflash, I want to focus on the very essential question that could be found, say, in one of the seminal documents of the Russian Revolution, the pre-revolutionary literature in Russia, which was a paper widely read and discussed at the time, called What Is to Be Done? I think it was by Chernyshevsky. I can't quite remember. I don't think it was by Gorky, but it might have been. Anyway, in the pre-revolutionary thinking of that period, before it became hijacked and contaminated by the Jewish Bolshevik element, people in Russia were facing the collapse of the Tsarist dynasty, which had existed for 1,000 years, and they wanted a new world order of their own, a self-defined world order, which unfortunately became perverted into what is called the dictatorship of the proletariat. But facing that question, facing that challenge, I should say, they posed the question, well, what is to be done? So I ask you now, coming around to the anniversary of 1 year in correction, well, what is to be done? Well, bear in mind what has been done by the Aeon Sophia herself, as I just indicated, and then consider what remains in regard to the human responsibilities in correction. Well, this, of course, is where the psychopaths come in. Now, some people, such as Jay Widener and others, who cite the Archon material, A, without ever mentioning that the narrative says that the Aeon Sophia inadvertently produced the Archons by her plunge from the Pleroma, and B, who do not observe the Gnostic profile of Archont behavior rigorously. Jay and others, much to my dismay, have made the claim that there are Archons walking among us, and that, as you would see on the tabloid headline of the tabloid newspaper in the supermarket checkout aisle, Archons in the White House. Well, I'm not even going to argue about it. They may as well be Archons, according to the way they behave. They may as well be invasion of the body snatcher substitutes for real human animals. But the bottom line truth is that they were born as human animals, and therefore they are human animals who are now operating as thoroughly archontified entities. However, given that description, I will allow that description, okay? I will allow it, okay? Given that description in play, it still remains crucial to distinguish psychopaths as such. Psychopaths and intra-species predators are a danger that arises in the human race, in the human species, due to factors that I have discussed at length, namely due to the aberrant way in which we reproduce, due to the fact that we suffer neoteny, N-E-O-T-E-N-Y. The human animal, when born, has an undeveloped brain. And the human animal, going on 5, 10, 15 years of life, is so easily programmed and imprinted by external influences due to neoteny that aberrance in our species is a common phenomenon. The aberrance is due to the conditioning and imprinting of the newborn infant up until its teens and even beyond its teens. So, in my view, we have to look at psychosis and psychopathic behavior in that respect and bring it down into the scope of human affairs and deal with it on the human level. So, what is to be done about the psychopaths? Well, I'm going to make a comment here that may come across as a very hard truth to some of you. Let's consider what the psychopaths want, the psychopaths in positions of power and influence on this planet, okay? The psychopaths in the military and defense industry, in the Pentagon, the psychopaths and interspecies predators in the banking industry, in the arms trafficking industry. Let's consider what they want and contrast it to what you and I want. They want a war, and they want a big one. I don't want a war, and I don't think you do either. What is to be done? Are they going to have their war? Well, it's quite possible that they will have their war, and I want to say this to you. The odds of them finally getting their war are still pretty good. Even though the Amsophia has neutralized the archontic emissions that would support them in their madness and that would uphold their agenda of madness and destruction, if I might put it in those terms, even though those extra human archontic emissions have been neutralized and the Earth is shielded from them, well, there's a lot of momentum in the war machine, isn't there? There's a lot of momentum in the bankster international banking mafia, and there's a lot of money to be made still in the event of a third world war, in the event of what I will call the annihilation event. Now, I would like to bring your attention to a paragraph that appears in the secret memo just before the timetable. What humanity comes to realize about the supernatural presence of the Earth can only be revealed in that catastrophic moment, not before or after. Such is my instruction. So, The Hindu Kalika term, cremation ground, I'm reading the previous paragraph now, is a metaphor. It does not necessarily denote nuclear war, although it might. That event may not and ought not to be predicted. What is certain, however, is that the intervention of the planetary animal mother only becomes manifest, ultimately, I would add, within the most catastrophic event conceivable, as it happens. The two events, ultimate catastrophe and her intervention, are simultaneous. I don't know if I could say it any more clearly than that. I stand by this statement, and I assure you, as I stand here in flesh and blood, living and breathing, with all my faculties apparently intact, I swear to you that this is one of the most difficult things that I have to say and have ever had to say to the people who care and dare to listen to me. It may be impossible to stop them from having what they want. Short of a massive military stand down, short of a burnout of all the shortwave and telecommunications systems that they use to wage war, or a combination of both those, and who knows what else, short of all that, they still stand a fairly good chance of bringing off their war. Now, what we saw in the late summer and fall of 2014, as this massive planetary event was unfolding, the installation of the anti-Archon shield, was an attempt by manipulation and lies to produce that ultimate catastrophic event in Ukraine. And it failed. It failed. Now, where are they going next? Well, go read about Operation Jade Helm. That's where they're going next. They're going to be focusing on two places at once, because the Operation Jade Helm apparently is a drill. Does that raise some alarms to you? A drill of a police state takeover in the United States of America. But at the same time, there is a counterpart to Operation Jade Helm that would be played out and deployed in the Middle East. The powers that be, in their desperate attempt to bring on the ultimate catastrophe, are toggling wildly between Ukraine, in the heart of Eurasia, and the Middle East, which is their familiar and well-trodden battleground, right? So we have to stand by and watch this happening. There's really nothing that we can do about it if we're not in the circles of the military, if we're not in contact with the perpetrators of this agenda. So it is possible that the psychopaths will have their way. What I am pointing out to you is that the brutal truth as I see it, let me call it the brutal probability. I won't be so presumptuous as to call it the truth. The probability is, if they're not stopped, and who's to stop them, then they will have their ultimate catastrophe. But the good news is that the full power of the planetary animal mother in alliance with humanity comes to be manifest in the moment when they achieve that goal. So I tell you, as much as you might like to think so, I warn you that she shall not stop them from accomplishing that event. She shall not, because it is not in her domain to do so. So the moment of responsibility in Kurukshetra, the moment of the creation of conscience, is now. And that moment continues as correction unfolds. I would just like to say in conclusion that what I would like to see, okay? This is what I personally would like to see. This is the biggest game changer that I can imagine in the domain of the social and collective life of humanity. Okay? The perpetrators and psychopaths would like to see an ultimate war of annihilation, which for them is just business as usual. What I would like to see is the expose of the Holocaust lie, the restoration of the dignity and nobility of the Germanic peoples, including the historical image of Adolf Hitler, and, get this, the financial reparation of everyone who has been defrauded by the Holocaust lie of 6 million Jews killed in gas chambers following a Nazi agenda of mass genocide. I would like to see that lie exposed, and I would like to see financial reparation coming from all the rich Jews in the world, starting with the Rothschild family, the Rothschild dynasty. I would like to see the Rothschild dynasty, who financed the First and Second World Wars. The evidence is clearly on the table. Read Anthony Sutton. Be sure to listen to Caroline Jaeger, who explains that Hitler was not funded by the Rothschilds, as many people claim. Caroline Jaeger, Y-E-A-G-E-R. And I would like to see, starting with the Rothschilds, the complete reclamation of all of their wealth, all of their properties, to be put into funds to serve the people of the white European nations to begin, because the white European nations have suffered more than anyone else from the intimidation and extortion and fraud of the Holocaust lie. This is why I harp on Hitler. This is why I have taken a stand on white genocide. I just want to say in closing, some of you may not have been able to follow me on that issue, but the issue of white genocide is the game changer in correction. I stand by that view. If you know what white genocide means, you see that it's just a name. It's like a pushpin that's holding a note to the wall. What's written on the pushpin is two little words, white genocide. Then go look at the note on the wall that pushpin is holding in place. And that note is a note of damages inflicted upon the human race through the anti-white hate speech using the word Nazi. The word Nazi is anti-white hate speech. And anyone who uses the term in a condemning manner, categorically condemning Hitler and the Germanic peoples, is party to this lie. I want to see that all come down. That is my highest desire for society and for the world of the collective life, the collective drama in the moment in which I am living. So thank you, as always, for your patience. And we shall continue to hold the Sophianic vision as the frame of experience and continue to contemplate together, I ask you, with me, to contemplate the game changers and how you and I, as individuals, can contribute to making those changes happen soon.